Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Never thought this statement would be an afterthought, but oh yeah, the president's coming to town tomorrow. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. You just heard the update from the various officials and authorities, including the Erie County DA, John Flynn. Before I take calls from you guys, I want to go to legal expert, nationally acclaimed attorney Paul Cambria on News Radio 930 WBEN. Paul, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Paul, first things first, District Attorney Flynn bent over backwards to make sure that we understood that the accused, whom we shall not name, has not been convicted of anything, that the accused is innocent until proven guilty. Is that part of a strategy to prevent an appeal down the road?
Well, it's actually compliance with an ethical rule. The ethical rule in New York says that public officials, particularly a district attorney or a U.S. attorney, must only say that someone is charged with X, Y, and Z. They're presumed to be innocent. And that's it. And not say something that could affect a jury at some, you know, somewhere down the line. And unfortunately, we see that violated all the time. And I'm glad to see that District Attorney Flynn is adhering to the rule. But I can tell you that several years ago, I sent letters to local prosecutors because I was tired of seeing press conferences where they'd say, well, now we finally got the person who did X, Y. And I'd say, well, wait a minute. You know, we have an ethical rule out there, and you guys saying this could influence jurors down the line. And I sent letters to the prosecutors pointing out the ethical rule. So he's just following the ethical rule, and good for him.
Paul Cambria is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. Paul, in terms of the trial itself, are you expecting a motion for a change of venue to get it out of Buffalo?
Yeah, that would make sense. And sometimes those are, I've had several of those granted, and it's very rare to see things like that granted, but it always requires something very specific. And in a case like this, they might have to do a poll so that they can show there's an overwhelming prejudice. It may be something where a judge in their discretion would say it's so pervasive in the community and struck at the heart of the community that we don't want to sit here for a month hearing prospective juror after prospective juror saying, I can't be fair. This way we move it out of the community, send it to Rochester or Syracuse or something like that, and try it there.
Paul Cambria is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. Are there any other circumstances or legal thresholds that have to be met in order to achieve the change of venue?
Well, no, that's basically the situation. And the courts have said that you actually have to wait till the actual questioning of the jurors. Mm. It's not even enough that there's pervasive publicity before the trial actually starts. And you'd be surprised. Sometimes you see people who say, no, you know, I can be fair. I was out of town, or it didn't affect me, or who knows? I mean, there are those people out there And it's up to a judge then to make some judgments as to whether or not they're credible and they should be seated as jurors or excused.
Is there still the I want to talk about the situation when this individual was 17 years old. He was ordered, didn't volunteer. He was ordered to undergo a mental health evaluation. Should he not, under New York law and the NIC system, have been red flagged so as not to be able to have purchased a firearm?
Well, you would think so. I mean, you know, common sense says that should be a red flag and there should be such an investigation.
But under New York SAFE and the NIC system, I don't think there's any way he should have been able to purchase a firearm. The minute he went in and presented his identification, his name would have popped up theoretically and he would have been barred. So something went, to me, Paul, something went wrong in the system because he didn't go in voluntarily. He had made, allegedly, threats against his school and was ordered, as I understand it, to undergo the mental eval and was still able to buy a firearm.
Yeah, and the question now is there some kind of action out there that's available to the victims' families or victims who survived and to take action and be able to sue for that failure? Was there a negligence? Did the statute run, et cetera? And I think you'll see someone looking into that as more facts develop.
Yeah, one would wonder who would have the liability. Would it be the physicians who did the assessment, the facility at which they worked, some clerk who maybe didn't input data into a computer? Clearly, this is something that needs additional investigation, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure it's past the physicians and to the people who input the data and the people who are supposed to be aware of the data and impose the restriction.
Paul, some people are very upset that the Buffalo police did not shoot and kill the suspect on Saturday. And I think you were listening earlier when I tried explaining why if he pointed the firearm at no one but himself, that would not have been acceptable under Article 35, Defense of Justification of New York Penal Law. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, you meet deadly force with deadly force. If there's no deadly force directed at the police officers, then they're not justified in shooting him and using deadly force on him. And the other thing is that, you know, with all of the criticism of some of the shootings that have occurred across the country, I know that a lot of the police who I know have now been trained to, in a situation like this, determine, you know, see if you can question the person down the line, if you can figure out if there are others who are involved or if it's just this guy alone. I mean, being alive. And for example, Lee Harvey Oswald, how much speculation has there been about whether he worked with someone else or not to kill Kennedy? And how many people would wish that he had survived so they could have solved that mystery?
Oh, Paul, I don't think Oswald shot anybody that day.
Yeah, there you go.
We got to have a discussion about that sometime. Paul Cambry is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. Paul, one of the things that is somewhat disconcerting to me as somebody who took an oath to uphold the Constitution at one point in my life is when I hear people talking about regulating speech and hate speech. You've been over the years an ardent defender of the First Amendment, as has had Ira Glasser of the ACLU. Can you explain to us your view on this call to start regulating speech?
Well, there are rules in place. The Supreme Court, I mean, you know, the cliche rule you hear about can't shelf, you know, yell fire at a crowded theater, that sort of thing. But in a situation like this, understand what the Supreme Court has said. In a case called Brandenburg, which was a case out of Cincinnati, and it involved the Ku Klux Klan and all of the hateful things they were saying in a speech, the Supreme Court said, you can advocate breaking the law. You can advocate racial. You can advocate discrimination. You can advocate all of those hateful things. What you can't do is direct your speech to inciting or producing that unlawful result. So if you, for example, it's one thing to talk about racism and other things, and it's something else to do a kind of a call to action, if you will. Example, if I were the head of some Ku Klux Klan cell, and I said to my members, all right, at 2 o'clock, grab your arms and meet me, and we're going to do X, Y, and Z that was against the law, that would not be protected. Because now I'm not just advocating it as my opinion or my theory. I'm calling on people to either produce or incite some imminent illawful, unlawful activity. Almost invented a word there. Unlawful activity. That's the difference. And so now the question is, you know, when they say we should control platforms, social media, and all the rest of it, realize that the First Amendment does protect people saying hateful things, things about violating the law and so on. It does not protect them when they move to inciting or producing that lawless conduct. That's now, different.
It's my understanding, not being an attorney, but in the Elanis case, Elanis versus the United States, the whole idea of making threats and what is a true threat was adjudicated by the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it has to be an imminent, for example, your words not only have to incite or produce, but they have to be likely to produce or incite the unlawful activity.
Well, Paul, I know you've got another interview coming up. I am deeply grateful for your legal knowledge. Is there anything that I did not ask you that you believe people need to know?
No, I think at this point we're going to have a big push to regulate social media. It'll be interesting to see how that goes and squares with the Constitution.
Indeed. Paul, I shall look forward to further conversations with you. Paul Cambria joining us on News Radio 930 WBEN. Let's get back to the calls, folks. And obviously, we're in a very fluid situation, my dear friends. So I apologize for the hold times. And we'll stack up calls and get to as many folks as we can between 530 and 6. Peter in Niagara Falls, you're on WBEN. Peter, at long last, you are on the air. Poor fella held on for a long time, and unfortunately, as often happens with us, just when I go to him, he's in the middle of something, as I'm sure has happened to you. It is the Monday after a horrible attack in our city, an attack which was made by somebody from the outside who was intentionally looking for what is known demographically as an HDBA, a high-density black area. I don't particularly care for that term. One of the things that I must express some concern over with some of the comments made by some of the politicians at the news briefing was the idea that we are not interconnected in Buffalo and Western New York. Like you, many of you listening, I know people who lost dear friends on Saturday. I know someone who had somebody, a relative, wounded on Saturday. And I do understand that this horrible excuse for a human being was targeting our black brothers and sisters. I get that. But when I'm around town, and you know because you see me, and I often put pictures up, I go a lot of different places, okay? And this people have to be careful with their words. And this idea that there is some kind of a wall that separates my white brothers and sisters from my black brothers and sisters, and that we are living in some kind of segregated society where we don't interact with one another, I don't think it is terribly healthy. Because, my friends, everybody in this area, every people around the country are deeply affected by what happened in Buffalo. And obviously, the closer you get to Buffalo, the more affected and deeply affected you are. I have felt hollow since Saturday. I could only do 2.5 hours of coverage on Saturday before I had to punch out or tap out and get Joe Beamer in here. I was drained, emotionally drained. And that, because I knew that one of my friends had lost a very dear friend in this horrible situation. And I felt bad for my friend. And then I found out some other things about my... And basically, what I'm trying to say is I think that what we need to be aware of as we come together is this false dichotomy between my white brothers and sisters, my black brothers and sisters, and my brothers and sisters of whatever persuasion, race, creed, or color. The supremacists, no matter what group they happen to believe is supreme and should inherit the earth, thank God, are very, very few in number, in my opinion. And I hope to God it stays that way, because we don't need hate. I don't know about you, I like seeing it when people who don't look alike are hanging out together and having a good time together and are genuinely connecting on a human level with one another. And I really urge the politicians to maybe reconsider the nomenclature they're using to describe the situation, because we are all connected. And yes, this gunman was a white supremacist racist. We know that for a fact. But to think that this is not resonating with people who are not our black brothers and sisters is not correct. It's not accurate. Speaking for myself, again, that feeling of hollowness and yeah, some anger has been penetrating me all weekend long since Saturday. Told you yesterday, I didn't know where I wanted to be. I was at home. I went out. I came back home. I went out again, came back home. I was restless. And I wanted to go down to Jefferson Avenue, but I didn't want to be a looky-loo. I didn't want to be a gawker. I thought that would be unseemly. 803-0930 is the phone number, *930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And as was brought up in the news conference just a little while ago, adding to the agony of the families of those who had loved ones murdered is the fact that the bodies have not yet been released by the medical examiner to funeral directors. And I'm sure you understand the reason why. Just as a crime scene, you never get a second chance to process a crime scene. You only have one chance to do it right. It's the same situation with the autopsy. Numerous things need to be done. Chain of evidence established. Every single individual who was gunned down on Saturday will be or has already undergone the most up-to-date forensic examination that is possible. They're not trying to be cruel by holding on to the bodies any longer than they need to. They need to make sure that the bodies are properly autopsied so that when this case comes to trial, that will be part of the evidence that is brought against the suspect. And I know, trust me, how frustrating it is waiting for a body to be released. Under much different circumstances, that happened to me, under much different circumstances, and it is frustrating, and it adds to your pain, because I know that if you are a victim or someone close to a victim, you hope to do honor at the homecoming. You hope to do honor at the service, and you hope to begin that whole process of closure, but it's not ever going to come. Those of you who lost loved ones, as you well know, your lives are never going to be the same. I think the closure is something that is very overrated, and I think it's a word that we toss around without understanding that, especially in a situation of a sudden death, a sudden unexpected death, especially a sudden unexpected death that is brought about by the deliberate, criminal, malicious hatred of another human being, and your loved one did nothing wrong, wasn't ganging it up, wasn't drugging it up, wasn't in the mob or anything like that. It's horrible, and it never is going to go away. The best you can do is hope that over time the pain becomes less acute and that it subsides, but it's always going to be a part of you, and that person you lost is always going to be a part of you. We expect people at times to die. I'm sure that you've had people in your life die after lengthy illnesses. You had ample warning that the end was near, that it was coming. You had a chance to brace for the inevitable. So when the phone call came or the knock on the door, or the ringing of the doorbell was heard, you understood what was going on. But these poor folks who loved the 10 people who were murdered on Saturday, if they weren't notified by the neighborhood telegraph, as we all have where we live, they weren't notified that way. They got a knock on the door from a detective or an officer. And those officers making that death notification, that is one of the hardest things that police officers have to do, because it's not like you can simply knock on the door and say, hey, so-and-so is no longer with us. People need as much information as they can get. People need to be consoled. You just don't go in and out. You want to make sure that the person to whom you break the news has somebody with them that they can lean on when they most need it in that sudden, acute moment of death notification. I would like to commend the Buffalo Police Department in particular for their rapid response to this situation. All too often, in situations like this, we hear people saying, it took them forever to get here. It took them 10 minutes to get here. And that's actually generally a trick of the mind, because when you are desperately in need of help, it's true that the seconds seem like minutes and the minutes seem like hours. But having watched the video of the horrific situation on Saturday, the only thing I can say is that the police response was as fast as I have ever seen. Originally, we had been told 2 minutes, and I did not like that number because I didn't think it was accurate. We are now being told it was a 1 minute response time. And kudos to those officers who, knowing or having reason to believe that there was, in fact, a mass shooting underway and every possibility that they were going to be outgunned, they did not wait for all hands on deck. The officers who arrived on the scene immediately entered an active shooting situation. And that is one of the lessons that we have learned from previous terrorist acts that have taken place in the United States and elsewhere. You must react quickly. You must engage as quickly as possible, because you will probably end up saving lives, as Lieutenant Salter did at Tops in all likelihood on Saturday. The police response was fast. It was lightning fast. And this could have been even worse than it was. My friends, if this, I hate calling him a human, because I don't like being in the same species as anybody who would do something like that. But if this individual had been able to exit the store and get in his car and drive away before the police had been on the scene, this would have been even worse than it already is. Even worse. So a lot of times, it's a question of where are you? Well, every time it's a question of where are you when the call goes out that you are needed and it's a horrible situation. And thank God there were police officers very close by to be able to respond in 1 minute to get to the location and then to immediately engage the gunman is just amazing. And I mentioned this earlier, and I think it needs to be addressed again. We talked about it a little bit with Paul Cambria. I know that some of you in the neighborhood are angry that the police did not shoot and kill a mad dog. And I will confess that part of me over the weekend was kind of hoping that maybe the neighborhood would get their hands on him first before the law got there and little street justice might play out. That's the emotional part of me. The rational part of me, and it's always served well, is that we need the law. Without the law, we have nothing. Without due process, we have nothing. Without procedures being followed, we have nothing. So as much as my emotional part wished there'd been a Wild West ending to this thing, my rational part is... My rational part understands the need for law, the need for everything that I had just mentioned. Now, one of the things that I also think needs to be addressed, and I haven't heard anybody mention this, but this individual had body armor. So Lieutenant Salter's shots, two hit. My understanding is he got 10 off and two struck, but they didn't do anything because of the body armor. There was a shootout in North Hollywood, California, back in the early 1990s, and there were two heavily armed suspects who were also wearing body armor. The LAPD, arriving on the scene, hopelessly outgunned. They were scoring hit after hit after hit on the suspects, and the rounds had no effect whatsoever. And I don't remember if they were still using the old 38 revolvers or whether at that point they'd gone to a Glock 9 or a 45 or a 40. I don't know what they were using, but whatever they were using, it was so ineffective that the LAPD literally had to raid a local gun store in order to keep up with the firepower that was used in the North Hollywood, California holdup. And miraculously, no civilian died in that. No police officer died in that. The suspects did die in that, one by his own hand. Now, where I'm going with this is the video that was taken by the alleged suspect. The video is no doubt going to be used by the police academies, probably at Quantico, and probably a lot of other agencies are going to be looking at that, because if you're confronted with somebody who's wearing body armor, and even a 45 is not going to penetrate that body armor, understand that police officers are trained to shoot at center body mass. Like, a lot of times you hear people say, well, why didn't they just shoot him in the arm? Why didn't they shoot him in the leg? Well, because police officers are trained for center body mass. But in a situation such as this, keeping in mind that the adrenaline is unbelievable. And if you want to know what the adrenaline does to your aim, run a quarter mile and then try to target shoot and see how much worse you are when your heart is pumping and you are in a somewhat heightened state of awareness. Your accuracy is not anything like what it is on the range. And that's a good exercise to do, those of you who carry, is run about a quarter mile if you can safely do it without having a heart attack. And then try to see if you're as accurate as you are at the range when you just walk in. And I'm going to tell you, you're not. But one of the things that I think can happen as a result of this, maybe, underline maybe, I'm not an expert. There are people who are experts in physiology and adrenaline and everything else, emergency response. But if you're confronted with a suspect who has body armor, where do you aim then? Center body mass is not going to down the suspect. Do we start training officers in such situations to go for an unarmored part of the body, to go for a face shot, to go for a shot to the weapon, to go for a shot to the hand? Is that what we need to do? And I hope that the information from Saturday will be used to come up with an alternative strategy for law enforcement officers in the very rare situation that they're confronted with somebody who has so armored themselves, because Lieutenant Salter didn't have a chance, and he knew he didn't have a chance, but he sacrificed himself so that others might live. And I believe there's something called the Carnegie Award, which is given to people who put their lives at risk to save people they don't even know. And I believe that Aaron Salter Jr. Should be considered very strongly for that award. And something I've not done yet today, and I hope you'll forgive me. I was going to do it, except the briefing went a little bit longer than many of us had thought it was going to. But I would like to acknowledge the names, the family members, the friends, the loved ones of those who died on Saturday. We know about the security guard. We know about maybe a couple of other people, but a total of 10 people were callously murdered on Saturday at Tops Friendly Markets. I'd like to give you their names. Roberta Drury, 32 years old, Buffalo. Margus D. Morrison, 52, Buffalo. Andre McNeil, 53, Auburn, New York. As we mentioned, Lieutenant Aaron Salter, 55, Lockport, New York. Geraldine Talley, 62, Buffalo. Celestine Cheney, 65, of Buffalo. Hayward Patterson, 67, of Buffalo. Catherine Massey, 72, of Buffalo. Pearlie Young, 77, of Buffalo. And Ruth Whitfield, 86, of Buffalo. Those are the names of those who were murdered on Saturday. And we've been pointing this out since our coverage on Saturday with Tim Wenger in the field. And we talk about this story as, 10 people are dead. But we need to absorb that those 10 people had real lives just as you do, and just as your family does, and just as I do, and loved ones, and circles of friends to whom they were very close and to whom they were very, very, very important people. So the number of hurting people in our area is in the thousands. Obviously, the closer you are to one of these people, the more acute the pain and the more egregious your heartbreak. But all of our hearts, to some degree, have been broken by what we have endured these past couple of days. Stand by, because we've got the news coming up at 6 o'clock with Tom Puckett on WBEN. We will have more coverage, of course, tomorrow morning. Brian Mazurowski, Susan Rose, followed by BMAZ, Brian Mazurowski and Joe Beamer, David Bellavia, 10 until 2. I'll be here starting at 2 o'clock tomorrow. I will be off on Thursday and Friday for some more eye surgery, so we'll try to be extra, take extra calls tomorrow and Wednesday.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.